Okay.
Mr. Smith.
Hello, brother.
Doing great about yourself.
They're getting adjusted here. Much better for me there. All right, so how we doing?
We're doing great.
That's good.
So you can hear me pretty well.
I can hear you well. And this segment's brought to you by Deer Park Water. No one knows the source, or even if it's water.
Well, ironically, I'm drinking Deer Park water as well.
That's our sponsor. That's good. You got to support the sponsor as the sponsor supports you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into it. Great Wednesday, listening audience. Welcome to King Street. I'm your host, King, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Andre Smith. And so how you doing, Ms. Smith?
Hey, doing excellent, Kling. Happy to be here, brother.
Happy to have you. So let's get started with our gratitude moment. And each day we like to begin our show definitely by saying what we're grateful for. And what I'm grateful for this morning is my life, my health, my strength, my ability to see, hear, walk, talk, stand, breathe, and have sound mind. I'm grateful for another 24 hours to pursue my purpose in life. I'm also grateful for all the protesters that's out there continuing to fight against injustice and fight for justice, sacrificing their lives, sacrificing their health. And lastly, I just want to thank all the friends and family members who believe in me and continue to support my purpose and my endeavors. How about yourself, Mr. Smith?
Well, I think first of all, I'm grateful for the relationship that I have with my Lord and Savior. Without him, you know, none of this would be possible. And when I say this, I mean not only the life that I live and the air that I breathe, but also fresh perspective. And so in times like this, it's always good to have perspective. And I think that's what helps give us wisdom. And it's not just knowledge, but it's applied knowledge that has a beneficial outcome, you know, which is wisdom. And so I'm grateful to be able to have that because short of that, you could kind of get caught up in the times and not be effective in what's going on. And so, yeah, I'm grateful for the opportunity to see things as an opportunity and not as a detriment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, these times we live in are very interesting times where every day, you know, we're seeing improvements in race relations. It's as though white society is being more accepting of black conscious, but being much more tolerant. And we see changing names of institutions, schools, statues coming down. And then finally, corporations stepping up and contributing. And I would say in a small way initially, but I believe change comes in small steps. You know, so it's interesting to see that change and see this kind of environment. Then the same token on the same news feed, you hear that coronavirus is going up. You know, so we live in a very interesting time right now with you can die just from meeting with someone and talking to someone, but then we're the pantheon of change as well. So what are your thoughts about that?
No, I think you're right. I think is change is the inevitable, right? We're organisms, so we are either living or dying at any stage of our life. And so I think what this pandemic does is it crystallizes, it magnifies what has already been there. So if you were a poor manager of money before the pandemic, then you know it could be something that could just spin out of control with the pandemic, because there's not a lot of room there, for mismanaging resources. And so I think what the pandemic does and these racial, this racial environment does is it along. So we've been pointing the finger, right, as to whose fault it is and who started it and who is it to blame, I think, but very quickly, what we're starting to realize is the people who see this for what it is and able to then say, how can I improve the plight of my family? How can I make better financial decisions? How can I manage the things that I can manage, meaning my health, you know, the social relationships that I have, you know, am I safely conducting, my business? As you say, it is, you know, it's easy to look and say, well, everyone's not wearing masks, or why did they open up this neighborhood and not open up that neighborhood? Why is this business able to function and that business not able to function? And that's a worthwhile conversation. But I think what is more important in this time, and these are probably the same type of people who always had excuses of why things weren't being done in their personal life. And so I think the pandemic gives us an opportunity for personal responsibility, is to say, with the information I know and what I know now, how am I managing myself? How am I conducting my affairs? Is my family in a stronger position or a better position coming out of this pandemic than we were going in this pandemic? Are we spending more time together? Are we eating meals together? Am I checking in with them? What are they thinking? What do they feel? How do they see this pandemic or even the social injustice? Where do they see their role? What part should they be playing and how should they fulfill that? And is there a role for me in terms of educating, giving them healthy perspective of what was before, you know, what we're looking at today? None of these things happened overnight and none of them are going to be solved overnight. But my point is, this opportunity gives us a chance to do some introspection into how we're conducting our lives and affairs and the things that we can control versus the things that are outside of our control.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, what's interesting to your point is that, you know, and there's this Chinese symbol that has one side crisis, on the other side opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's what I have always looked at my life in that context ever since I discovered that symbol, or that symbol gave me context for it, is that out of crisis is going to come great opportunity. So there's going to be a lot of folks that's going to become very successful financially as a result of this pandemic. And it's not just a financial success. It's also, you know, oddly enough, and my prayers and definitely my thoughts go out to the folks who suffered and died as a result of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. But I would say that one of the blessings, because you could always find blessings in everything, one of the blessings is that it's forced a nation to be on a forced pause, that everybody had to sit here and just take time to just reflect whether you wanted to or not, because the nation, the whole world is not getting out. And people, you've been forced not to be able to go out and interact, but just sit at home and think whether you wanted to or not. And I think it's been very helpful. Now, I've used that time wisely for me to really reflect on my life, reflect on having to change the business model over to a total virtual business model, build that infrastructure, and begin to really rethink how I want to do business going forward. But I had enough time to have patience to think through that instead of just adjusting quickly and trying to get something up quickly to generate revenue. I had an opportunity to really think through it and say to myself, is this direction I want to go in? What's the best approach for this direction? How do I really want to write my content? How do I really want to focus on the messaging? How do I really want to get my the infrastructure and tools and really come into a very well thought strategy and plan for how I'm going to execute my business going forward. So for me, 2020, the next 6 months are going to be something that I haven't had an opportunity to put this much thought and planning into something without having the urgent need of generating revenue for a long time in my life since I became an entrepreneur. So for me, it's been a blessing for that regard. And I think that that's also been helpful in relations as well. Because I think that white folks have now been more open because they've had an opportunity to sit back and just watch George Floyd, watch these protests, watch the videos. And instead of you going through your normal day life and being oblivious to the pain and suffering that people out there that don't look like you are having, you're seeing that and you get a chance to reflect on that and even discuss that with your family. And I think for folks who are open-minded and folks who are not racist, but just maybe be ignorant to the suffering and the plight that our people have suffered, are now beginning to wake up and realize that there has been some injustice and that Black folks are still suffering. And I think now they're open to learning what role they can play and make that happen as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you 100%. And the thing that I would say, you know, you mentioned having patience and working your business model and looking at various tools. There's a chapter in the Bible in James. It says to let patience have its perfect work. And it sounds counterintuitive, is that how can patience be perfect? And that's what it's telling us, is that as we go through trials and tribulations, as we're going through right now, if we are patient, right, then it can have its perfect work, because as these challenges come up again, I can have faith and have confidence in the outcome, because guess what? I've already overcame. So that's why I said a healthy dose of perspective is good in these situations, because you'll find that, hey, there was some tough times before this time, and I did get through that. And so it encourages you to say, hey, you know, what did I do the last time I didn't have enough in the cupboard? What did I do the last time when I got laid off my job, when it looked like things weren't going to add up and I wasn't going to be able to make loose ends meet? And lo and behold, you're encouraged because you say, hey, I got through that. So this right here is not so bad. It's not as bad as the news is making it out to be. But to your point is, you were saying that, you know, as you're going through this, you know, you're looking at racial injustice and what white folks are having to atone for or at least recognize in this environment. And again, it makes me go back to, what is it that we can control and what can't we control? We can't control how other people will regard you. But what you can control is how you regard yourself. And so what I am just laser focused on in this time is, you know, what do we believe about ourselves to be true? When I say ourselves, I mean people of color. You know, do we know our history? So are we easily manipulated because people can tell us a story and we haven't actually did the research or test for what it is that they're saying one way or another? Or are we emotional about our responses to things that is void of truth, right? So what I'm sharing with you is, if we're waiting for the world to change because we're waiting for white folks to change how they value Black people, I'm not sure that that's going to happen anytime soon. But what I think will happen is, if you are someone of color and you do understand who you are, you understand whose you are, more importantly, and then I think regardless of how other people treat you and or, deal with you, it doesn't diminish who you are. I think the challenge is, we get into these, you know, very cute sayings, and we talk about Black Lives Matter, right? And again, I understand it. I understand what is trying to be communicated. I understand you're trying to esteem a group of people that in a lot of ways have been disenfranchised and politically, economically, social injustice. And you're saying, hey, we're fed up and we want to be recognized for who we are. And I respect that. However, saying that Black Lives Matter, are we saying that to each other? Or are we saying that to a community other than the minority community? So what do I mean by that? If we say Black Lives Matter when it's a white cop that kills a Black person, but does Black Lives Matter not matter when it's Black on Black crimes? So again, we're talking about the things that we can control, mm-hmm. which is the narrative and how we see ourselves, right? Because we can't control how other people see us. So does Black Lives Matter when it's B on B, B-O-B, Black on Black? Or does Black Lives only matters when it's C-O-B, when it's cop on Black, right? So it's right. Bob or Cobb. So what I'm saying to you is to say that Black Lives Matter, it doesn't have to be said. If you believe that Black Lives Matter, why do we need a slogan? So do you say that so that someone else can recognize that Black Lives Matter? Or is it because we have so many contradictions in our lives in terms of our language, in terms of how we treat each other, in terms of how we perceive ourselves, in terms of our lack of willingness to apply ourselves as it relates to education and knowledge? And again, trust me, I understand the reality. I am a Black male who have had officers pulling an assault rifle on me and I wasn't even committing a crime. So when I say this, I'm not saying this in jest. I'm saying it so that we as people of color can think about this subject and approach this subject in a way of power and empowerment and not as a way of waiting to see what someone else's response is going to be when I say Black Lives Matter. Are right. they not going to let me come in their restaurant? Oh, then they don't value Black lives, right? So when I say Black Lives Matter, is this a battle cry to someone else, or is it a battle cry to me and to my community? And I think the outcomes are going to be vastly different depending on who that narrative is created for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I believe that to your point, that I think was really missing from our culture that used to be there is not there as much as that personal development aspect. Reading books that you begin to understand your mind that the change is in your hands. Like, you know, I'm going through and launching my new course around the 7 keys to being a conscious leader. And what I realized is this, that how can you pray for change in your life from God when you're not willing to first make changes in your life yourself? You know, so to that point, when you realize that you don't need to play the victim role and say everything to change is external from you, hoping that white folks accept you in society or that you pray that God gives you something, but you put the power all external from you instead of saying, what can I do myself? And so to that point, what I realized, if I want to pray to God for change, then I first must change. So I look at, what am I doing with regards to how I'm eating? Eating a more healthier lifestyle, or having a more healthier lifestyle by eating the right foods, cutting out carbs, cutting out food that I know that's bad for me, because right now the coronavirus, it's much more detrimental to you, particularly us as a community of Black individuals, that if you're not physically active and you're eating bad foods, then you'll be more susceptible at our age for coronavirus. So that now you have to add that to the complexities of how ways that you can die.
And to King, not to interrupt you, but just so I can be clear, those two things that you mentioned, you have total control over both of those, right?
Right.
Exercise and diet.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Right. And then also when it comes down to when it's personal development, the way you think. See, I approach life as though I'm in a constant service mindset. How can I serve better? What can I do to improve my knowledge, my competence, so that I can be of better service? Someone else called me the other day and asked me questions about their behind on their mortgage. Someone from an African immigrant community was saying this woman is 3 months behind on her mortgage, and she wanted to know what can she do to keep her house because she lost her job, you know? And I had to ask him some questions like, well, first of all, what is she doing to get a job? Because, you know, he said the banks is working with her. He said, well, she's going to need more time. And I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole with my whole conversation with her, but my point was, her perspective was she wanted the banks to work with her continuously, even though she doesn't have a job. And I told him, well, the first step is there's resources, and I referred them to a nonprofit that can help her with that, negotiating a possible forbearance. He asked, what could she possibly get her loan restructured? And I asked, what was the interest rate? And he said, 3.45. I said, that's a great interest rate. I don't know if they're going to, you know, refinance her to a lower mortgage or a lower interest rate. But, you know, but my point of, I'm saying this is that it's funny how folks is looking at their situation and saying, how can I, after not paying my mortgage for 3 more months, how can I have even more time? It's like, what have you done? And she's stressed out, not knowing what's going to happen, whether she may get evicted because she's never been in that part of that process. And what I'm going with this is, when you take control to yourself, you pray for guidance. You pray for the wisdom. You pray for the commitment to say, let me begin to start making phone calls and do some research so I can understand the situation that I'm in. And understand that if you're not paying your mortgage right now, and it's been 3 months, what have you done in that past 3 months to prepare yourself so that you can, when you do talk to the lender and keep that communication open, you can say, well, I can't pay you today, but give me 60 days and here's the plan I've been working on. But don't just ask for more time and you don't have any plan to work things out with the lender is where I'm going with that. Because you're not taking ownership yourself to say, what can I do to solve it? Right. The fact that there's people out there right now who haven't worked in 5 months and yet still they're hoping that Congress passes more legislation that allows them to extend unemployment benefits and even extend pandemic services so that they can continue to live without them making any plans themselves to try to adapt and get online education and improve their competence so that they can overall improve their value and begin to make money differently so that when this money does run out, they'll be in a position to deal with it.
Right, and I agree. And like I said, King, I don't want to come off as insensitive or not understanding the challenges that people have, because the reality is there's people who could not go to work, who was physically able to, who was willing to go to work, but because the government had an order in place, state government, federal government, they couldn't report to work. And so I understand that the government should take care of those people. If they weren't able to work and was willing to work, then they should get unemployment benefits and all the other things that come with that, whether that's health benefits, if they weren't able to keep their health insurance, all those things should come. The only thing I'm suggesting is, in the time that you have, how are you managing those times? How are you managing your time and the resources that you have, given that at some point we're going to come out of this pandemic, right? So you may not be able to control when you go back to work, but you surely can control having a plan in place as to how you're going to leverage the money that you make while you're on your job, or even how you're using your time not being on the job, right? So that's all I'm suggesting. But I think this is a good segue to say that, you know, really this is a real estate show, and what we're focused on is really how to use real estate as a way to leverage and build a legacy and a family and wealth for your family. And so as King, as you mentioned earlier, my name is Andre Smith, and I'm a licensed real estate broker and has been for about the last 20 years. And I've had the great pleasure to serve many communities and help many people become first-time home buyers, as well as people finding properties for their businesses. And that has been a pleasure for me over the last 20 years. And I have literally seen situations where people go from, you know, not having the credit and the other things to be able to get qualified for a loan and listen to wise counsel and be able to get themselves in position, not only to get their first house, but then to buy and move up to other properties and also be able to move into commercial properties for their businesses and the like. So we do believe that it's a great buying opportunity in the marketplace for those who are situated to do so, like every other meltdown that we've seen either in the economy over the last 40 years, we've also seen winners that come out on the other side who were wise enough to look at real estate as a way because of where the numbers were. You mentioned earlier interest rates at 3%. It is a great buying opportunity for those who are in position.
Absolutely. And to your point, you know, with this being a real estate show, and I'm glad you move that segue, because where I was going with this is that now's the time you want to figure out what you can do to earn additional money so you can be in a position so you can begin to buy the real estate, you know, and this additional time at home. Like, for example, a lot of folks only realize that Harvard has classes that's online that's free. They can teach you things such as programming, some business fundamentals. These are free classes. YouTube has a ton of other information that's out there that's free. You know, so if you're starting off with, I have no money right now, society or the government or the governor has extended where utilities cannot cut you off for lack of payment. Utilities being water, gas and electric, and internet. And they can't cut you off. So that keeps you there. So my point is, this is a perfect time for you to say, I'm going all in on the dream that I have. I'm going to put myself in a position where I can generate more revenue so that I can take advantage of real estate. But I think the first thing that people have to realize when they're going to get into the real estate business is that it is a business and not a hobby, and that you need to understand the business fundamentals of real estate. What drives, why is a house $5,000 on one block in Baltimore City and the very next block over that same type of house, same structure, maybe $50,000. I'm talking about a shell. Why is that? What drives that? Why is a house in selling right now for $150,000 and just 2 years ago, I mean, a condo right now selling for $150,000 where someone, you can look at the history and they purchased it 3 years ago and they paid $175,000. Why is that? You know, what's the supply and demand that's causing that? How do you go about interviewing real estate professionals, and who are the people that you're going to be engaged with when you get into the real estate? What are the roles of a real estate agent? What are the roles of a lender? What are the roles of a title company and an appraiser and a home inspector? See, all these things become very relevant when you decide that you want to get into real estate. You have to begin to learn the roles, responsibilities, some economics, and then you can begin to understand, once you have that basic understanding, the fundamentals, how you can begin to engage and generate revenue yourself. And I think the wrong mistake that most people get into is buying those guru courses that tell you that I want to take you from knowing nothing, and you pay me $20,000 and in 6 weeks, I can turn you from not having any knowledge and experience in real estate and generate any revenue, that in 6 weeks I can help you generate $60,000 or $70,000 when the person's never generated that before in their lifetime, and then they expect that to be successful. I think that to me is a gamble. And I think that the culture of real estate as it relates to real estate investing training is to get people sold in that gamble mentality. And the purpose of this show is to shift people away from that. If we're going to build long-term wealth through real estate, we have to understand the fundamentals of it. We have to understand the players of it. Then we understand how we're going to play our role in it and what's the best approach. Is it better to buy and hold first? Is it better to try to go out here and buy and do a renovation job first? Or is it even better to just partner with someone where you just get a small piece of the profit, but you shadow and learn the process of the first three or four deals, so that way you don't have all the risk of losing your money. The return might not be great for you, but at the same time, you're not risking anything other than your time, and you're exercising that patience to learn the system and learn the business in that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. So, I mean, I think, you know, let's just unpack a little bit of what you said. You named out some pitfalls that people have not understanding or not having knowledge. Let's just go through the roles. Like you mentioned, several people that you will need to assist you at some aspect or another. So you mentioned a realtor, right? So we're talking about real estate investment here, and we're talking about these positions as it relates to you being successful as a real estate investor. And so one of the key people on your team will be the realtor. Another key person will be the title agent, as you mentioned, and also the lender. So let's just take these three people, and you're going to have probably additional people that'll be helping to assist you. But let's just define the roles of these three people, and let's put that in context as to how these people, as you mentioned earlier, King, can minimize your liability, but also maximize your return, because real estate is a risk assessment business. And so if you can minimize the risk, then also the other is true as well, because you're going to be maximizing the profit. And so why would you need a realtor in an investment scenario? The truth of the matter is you don't have to have a realtor. It's not a requirement by license, by law. It's not a requirement that you have a realtor when you purchase a house or an investment property in this case. But you should also think about that a real estate professional, in this case a realtor, is someone that's trained and someone that does this on a day-to-day basis. So what that can do is save you time, save you effort and frustration. So one of the greatest values that a realtor would bring to you would be access to properties. And so it's a very good chance, because this person is doing this as a business day-to-day, they will know people who may have properties on the market, or have access to other realtors or professionals who may be working in the interest of their clients who has listings that potentially you can buy. So they could save you time in finding properties. They could also help you assess the property. So once you find it, what is going to be required in terms of repairs? What should be the best strategy for this property? Is it a buy and hold? Meaning that, is it a property that's in an area that's not fully developed? And so that you can hold the property over a period of time in hoping that the community would improve and therefore the value of the property would improve. So the repairs that you do in that property should be consistent with what the strategy is going to be, right? Versus if you're going to buy it and flip it. And so those are a few of the reasons why you should have a realtor to help you in your corner throughout this process. The second person you mentioned, King, is a lender. So that's very important, because that's the person that's going to actually give you the money. So you're going to be able to go shopping once you get what we call an approval letter. That's a lender who looks at your credit, looks at the risk. Again, this is a risk assessment to say, what is the likelihood that this person will pay me back my money? And once that's done, they will give you a letter telling you how much you are approved for. And in that case, now you're able to go and shop. So the lender's responsibility is to see if you qualify, and if you do, what loan products they have in which you would qualify for, and then giving you the terms of repayment of that loan. And once that's done and you find the property, then that's when these three things come together, because the title agent is going to do what we call a search on title, to make sure there's no clouds on the title, to make sure it's free and clear so that the property can be encumbered by you. And again, risk assessment, that there's not any future issues that may come up as it relates to the title, because the title was not transferred properly. So that's gonna be their responsibility. One of the misnomers is the title company does not represent the buyer or the seller. The title company represents the transaction. So their job is to fulfill the contract. What are the terms of the contract? How much should the property be sold for? When should the property be sold? Meaning, what is that closing date? What fees are the buyer responsible for? Transfers, liquidations, or anything else? What fees are the seller responsible for? And then where is the money coming from? Is there a third party, in this case, the lender, who's going to pledge the money on the buyer's behalf at settlement? And then all the other transfers and liquidations, does the state get their portion of the money? Does the federal government get their portion of the money? Was there any repairs that was done in the house, and those repairs, the reimbursement would then go to the contractor? Is there an outstanding water bill on the property? Is there outstanding utility bills? So they check all those things to make sure that when you move into the, or when you take ownership of the property, there's no previous debt or no previous liability that that hasn't already been addressed, so that you can do what we call enjoy the property. So you have the right of enjoyment once you purchase the property, and that's the title company's responsibility, is to make sure there's no encumbrances that may affect your ownership of the property. So in a nutshell, that's a very quick summary of those three roles and what they play, but also how they can minimize your liability in the transaction to make sure you're successful and able to accomplish what your goal was within this particular deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that, because I believe that the first step is gathering that information. Yes. Just understanding from someone who's been in the business for years, what the roles are, so that you can begin to ask intelligent questions. You know, I had a young couple come to me last year. As a matter of fact, they were referred to me, and they referred to me because they had invested with a guy here in Baltimore City who they met at some meetup group, and he promised them that they can do a deal. And this is the deal he offered them. They had no experience in real estate whatsoever. The gentleman has saved up himself, that was brought to me, $30,000. Him and his wife wanted to get in real estate, but of course they wanted to go with the microwave approach. And I call it the microwave approach because most people just want to be able to heat their food up real quick so they can eat, without really understanding that what goes into, that there is a risk and a consequence for not having that patience we talked about earlier. So basically, they paid this guy $10,000 of their own money for his course, and then agreed that they would partner with him and give him 50% of the deal. And this guy promised them that what he would do is find a lender for him. So he was able to get them a loan with a, at that time, it was a hard money loan. They were paying about 18% interest. They brought the house using their credit. The guy said, who was a guru, said, I'll partner with you and I will go ahead and get the contractors for you. And my job is also to get the back end buyer. But my clients that were brought to me had the responsibilities of putting the property in their names, as well as funding the deal. So as you know how things would go, the guy got started. And once they started the demo, the contractors were not reliable. It wasn't coming there. The guy, of course, he was excited about it. He would go by the site every day. Contractor wasn't showing up. Work wasn't being done. Interest occurring on the money that they're paying, already absorbing the amount of money. So long story short, eventually, by the time they came to me, it had been 6 months. The guy hadn't done any work, and they could not sell the property because they had added the guy's name, the guru's name, to the title. So he had ownership interest in the property without even putting the equity at all financially into the property. They couldn't even sell the property. And he wasn't even bringing his contractors in. And so they wanted me to fix it. You know, and I told him the best thing I can tell him that is that you got to work it out with him. You got to find a way to get him to sell you the interest of the property. You got to, you know, so I got attorneys involved, and the attorney scared him. And I said, you got to be willing to attack him on social media and, you know, put it out there that his business practices are detrimental to growth. And all that did eventually work, and they were able to get out of the property. I mean, get him out of the property, but they're still stuck with now having to renovate a house with no experience on their own. And I share this story because what attracted them to that was a quick, easy microwave way of getting in real estate and trusting someone you did not know, because he showed some material acquisition. He he shows some material success, and you believe him because you wanted to believe this person, as opposed to doing your research and just asking yourself, does it make sense that if I am the person that's going to use my name, my credit, and my money to buy the deal wholly, and I'm just going to make you 50% partner, and all you're doing is saying you're going to do the sweat equity of managing the contractors and selling the property, where both of those things are quantitative, that you may not do a good job managing the property and you may not find a buyer, but you've already secured your 50% up front, where I had to put my name in the property, I had to use my credit, so I've already committed my thing, but you don't have to do yours. See, that goes back to showing a person's naiveness and experience when doing real estate. And that's what so many people get burned in this business, because they want that quick fix microwave solution instead of the patience of learning the business and thinking about how best to grow. And I'm gonna say something that might be somewhat viewed as radical, but I believe that you shouldn't engage in your first real estate deal until you've spent at least 6 months studying, researching before you get in your first deal. And I think if you spend 6 months doing that before you pull the trigger, you would come out much more better and prepared in that deal than to just jump out there based on someone's just suggestion. And that I'm saying that from experience of making bad decisions myself in real estate. So I'm not judging anybody for making bad decisions. I think everybody who I know who's in real estate, who's been in real estate, particularly as it relates to renovating properties, has a horror story to share with you. And that's because of inexperience. That's because trusting other folks without really understanding how to vet that person. And then finally, just trying to get something done without understanding the entire process. And so, Mr. Smith, what I wanted to ask you as we begin to really dig deep, and this being the first session of our series that we're going to do on overcoming economic disparities and helping build wealth through real estate and through real estate ownership, that what would you say, now let's take it from scratch, a person based on what we're saying, a person now says, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, Mr. King and Mrs. Smith. And so what would you say is step one for me? I have no real estate experience at all, but I do want to get into real estate investing. What is step one for me? What would your advice be to that individual?
Yeah, so again, I would start to ask questions that have nothing to do with real estate, to be perfectly honest with you. And it may sound like bizarre questions, but I think it will help make it clear if this is the right venture for you, right? So when they ask me, well, what is my experience? I can share with them the experience and the knowledge that's required for them to win at real estate. However, I need to know that they're committed. So I need to help them understand, when I say committed, what is required, right? So are you willing to spend, you know, 3 hours a week, 4 hours a week on learning, right, the lingo of real estate, right? Yes, right. I'm a professional. I've been in the business for 20 years, but like the old Sims commercial, an educated consumer is my best customer, right? Because you can appreciate the value that I bring when you understand the process. Now, part of my job is helping you understand the process. But so the first is, you know, are you committed? Secondly, are you in the financial position at this stage of your life? You know, do you have a young family? Do you have a more mature family? Are you single? You know, what are your other financial commitments and responsibilities? And who are those two? You know, so do you have a budget? Meaning, do you have discretionary income at the end of the month that you can be able to invest in real estate? You know, what is your FICO score? Are you in, do you have the credit that's required to get lending? Or do you have other sources of funds? You know, maybe you want to pull it out your retirement account, or maybe you're going to cash in an insurance policy, or maybe you're going to pay cash. All those are options. And so this is just, you know, a litany of questions that I will ask, which will give me a sense of how prepared this person is to move forward and invest in real estate. Or is this just a fly-by-night idea that they just had to be able to get rich and make a quick dollar. So once we establish the answers to those questions, then we start to discuss the risks, the risk tolerance, you know. And it's the way I run my practice, King, it's kind of as if you were, to go in and see a financial planner, and you told a financial planner that you want to build wealth for retirement. You know, the first thing that he would have you do, or at least the financial planners I've worked with, the first thing he had me do was fill out a questionnaire, because what he wanted to do is get more information about, you know, what is my sense as it relates to risk? Am I risk averse? Am I someone who's is more riskier or less riskier? And then depending on my stage in life, if I want to retire in the next 5 years, it's going to be a different strategy than if I'm retiring in 30 years. So the questions I'm asking them is going to speak to what, why real estate investment? This is a means to an end of what? Are you trying to fund your retirement? Are you just trying to help pay for your children's education? Is this just a hobby for you, something that you saw on HGTV and you thought it'd be a fun way to spend your weekends, or you're just a weekend warrior? So those answers are going to help me understand the mindset, or at least the approach that this potential investor has. And then assuming that all those things are favorable, then we would start to get into, okay, what is the strategy to accomplish your goal? What is your goal in real estate in terms of financially? What is it going to help you do? So what opportunities are going to open up in your life because you're invested in your real estate? And then what is the connection between you and real estate? Meaning, is this social impact for you? Is it a means to provide housing for people in transition? Like, what exactly is the overall thing that's drawing you to real estate? What is your why? Because if I understand your why, I understand your motivation, and I understand that, okay, that's something that's bigger than you. So on days that you don't feel like doing what you need to do to make this business work, are you going to be able to dig deep in understanding that it's something bigger than you that's going to drive you to making this happen? So I think that's a long way to say, you know, when I meet with someone, what questions would I be asking them in terms of them getting started? It's really a gut check to find out why real estate and why now.
Okay. And is that a consultation that you normally do for a fee, or is that something you do for free? How does that work from
Oh yeah, no, there's no charge. I mean, kind of the way I approach it or have approached it, and listen, even if someone charges for it, I'm not even saying that's not a good idea. But the reason why I don't charge is because this is, as well as it's you interviewing me, it's me interviewing you. So the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur and being self-employed is there's so many different ways that you can acquire clients and different people to work with. And what I've found is the people that I work well together are people that when I lay out the expectations and how we are to manage the relationship, they get it. They understand it. So it's going to be something that's going to take a little bit of both of us. So there is some work that's going to be required on your part. There are some expectations on your part, and I'll lay those out, as well as I will tell you what expectations you should have of me and what you should expect at every part of the process. So at the end of the meeting, it's one or two outcomes. The first outcome could be, hey, this was a great meeting. We both are on one accord. I think it would work well for us to work together. Or it could be, hey, it was great meeting you. Good luck in your pursuit for investing in real estate. I may even be able to give you some resources to help you take the next step, but maybe it's not a good fit, or it's not a good fit at this time for us to work together. And we both have the option to exercise that at the end of our meeting. So I don't charge, because when you charge, there's an expectation. So if I charge you and I find that we're not going to be a good match, I took your money, and I think that was dishonest. So to be in integrity, I would say it is a interview, and we're interviewing each other to see if it's a good match to take the next step.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, and I respect that. The reason I asked that question, and You're right. I think that sometimes you may have to pay for guidance. You may have to pay for advice, because there's a lot of free advice out there that it's not worth a damn.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, fall suit to that. You don't know how many times folks come to me and say, you know, King, this person told me I should buy this house. What do you think? And I'm like, that's just not a question that can just be answered on, here's what my thoughts are. There's a lot more involved with that. So now if you want me to really spend an hour dissecting that question, then that hour requires time. And I'm a person who believes this, and I get why you say you don't charge, but I believe that you should never help somebody make money in business for free. Now, you can give people some good suggestions, and I like the way you laid things out, but if you're gonna, if someone, the expectation is that I'm gonna make money from your advice, I think a person should be willing to pay money for that advice. That's what I believe, just from a universal law principle. I'm a person that believes in universal laws, and that if you apply that principle to your thinking, then when you get to the point where you're a consultant, someone will be willing to pay you as well for your advice and your guidance. But I like what you laid out there as your first steps, and why you say that you may or may not charge an individual who comes to you for that advice.
Yeah, and I think the small caveat to what I was saying is defining the meeting. So if the meeting is an interest meeting, which is what, how I would characterize what I just described, it's an interest meeting. Do I have an interest in working with you? Do you have an interest in working with me? Different in my practice than a consultation. So if I have a consultation with you, I'm consulting you on a particular issue or challenge, situation, or circumstances that you might have or may not have. You may want to prevent a particular situation, circumstances, or occurrence, and I'm consulting you on that. And that might lead to, as you mentioned, the introduction to someone else in my network who may be that you may have to discuss this with based on the particulars of our conversation. So I totally support a consultation being compensated for, but I don't charge for the exploratory conversation. But also, I think it's important for people to know prior to meeting a professional what type of meeting this is, right? So if this is a consultation, they should know that, and they should know what to expect in terms of payment, when they're going to be making the payment, what should be the outcome or expected outcome of this consultation. So in that case, I agree with you 100%. It should be totally transparent, and they should know what type of engagement, and then if it's paid, if they have a fee or not, would be associated with the type of consultation, or if it's a consultation, I should say.
I like the distinction. And as we get near the top of the hour, why don't you share with our listening audience your contact information so they may be able to take you up on that interest meeting and get some of that initial consultation from you.
Oh yeah, absolutely, King. So again, the name of my brokerage is Velocity Real Estate Group. We've been in business for about 20 years, and we're happy to have a discussion with you. If you're a seasoned investor and you're looking for an investment strategy, we can definitely help you put together a winning strategy. I should also say that I am an investor and developer myself. So the consultations that I give, the information that I give, the strategies that I give are ones that I'm using in my own practice, as well as ones that we use for clients that we represent. And so, and that could be in a multitude of different ways. That could be to develop property. That could be your first time. You were just looking for a property to buy and hold. Something that you'll hold as a renter. We can not only help you find the property, we can also secure a renter for you, as well as we have a property management division that could manage that property for you, and you would get financial reports and income statements on a week-to-week basis, a month-to-month basis, I should say, on that type of property. But how you can reach me is my direct number is 202-246-0197. Again, that's 202-246-0197. And you can email me at Andre, A-N-D-R-E, dot yourrealtor@gmail.com. Again, that's andre.yourrealtor, YOURREALTOR at gmail.com.
Excellent, excellent. And listening audience, if you want more information about the Conscious Real Estate Investors Roundtable and what our mission is, and you're interested in investing with a higher purpose, then we encourage you to visit our website at www.consciousrt.com. Again, that's consciousrt.com. That's spelled consciousrt, as in roundtable.com. And as Mr. Smith and I have said for some time now, we will be having different classes we're going to be putting out there to guide you in your real estate investing endeavors. So definitely continue to look at the website and listen to the radio shows, and we're going to continue to provide that information to you. Now, Mr. Smith, any last thoughts you want to leave with our listening audience about going forth and looking at how they can overcome economic disparity through real estate ownership?
Yeah, I think, the most important thing is just start. You know, you don't have to be great to start, but you got to start to be great. And so the focus is not on what you don't have or what you think you need. It first starts with a decision. You can make a decision today that I will become a real estate investor. You may not have the resources. You may not have the strategy. You may not even have the confidence right now to become a real estate investor. But if you make that choice to say, today I will become a real estate investor, and then we can walk this out together. We can give you the knowledge that you need. We can give you the support that you need through training and through our professional network to help you move forward in investing in real estate. So if you're a seasoned investor and you're finding yourself constantly having the same conversations as to why things are not going well, we'd like to have a discussion with you as well. Or if you've just made a decision on this broadcast to say, listen, I want to get in this game. This is something that I want to be a part of. Then we welcome you as well. So today it all starts with a choice. So again, I would say you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great.
Love that. Love that. And I'll leave you all listening audience with this piece of thought. They remember that two things say everything about you as far as your character. That's your attitude when you have everything and your patience when you have nothing. Mm. So as Sidney Poitier once said, possess your soul of patience. Mm. And patience comes from getting an understanding and getting clarity on what your goal is, what your purpose is in life, and then getting clarity, understanding of how you're going to engage in a business transaction and get real about the fact that if you're going to get into real estate, make sure you understand you're getting into a business. And with that business requires a business knowledge and a business competence. So keep that in mind. And until next Wednesday, we want to make sure that everyone continues to be more conscious, look for ways to increase your competence out there. And lastly, adopt a service mentality. Learn how you can give and be of value and take advantage of this time that you have right now. Again, just to be patient and get that learning. So with that being said, listening audience, thank you for tuning in to another episode of King Street. I'm King signing off. Thank you, Mrs. Smith, for tuning in as well, providing your expert advice. Everybody be safe, and let's be more conscious.